Charles?
Okay, Commissioner Ames, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Sounds great. We will go ahead and call our Board of County Commissioners meeting to order for today. We're thankful for all of those who are in person with us or participating electronically. As is traditional, we will begin our meeting with a prayer reading or thought, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance. We'd look to anyone who would be willing to lead us in those. Is there someone who'd be willing to offer the prayer reading or thought? Bill?
I'll give the prayer.
Okay, and I can lead us in the pledge.
Our Heavenly Father, we thank Thee for the opportunity that we have to come and meet and assemble peaceably and be able to discuss and talk about issues here in the county. We're thankful for the great people that we represent here in this county. We pray for them. We pray for those who are suffering through illness, especially this pandemic. We pray for their speedy recovery. We're thankful for this great country that we have to live in and the great freedoms that are ours. We pray for those who are protecting those freedoms wherever they may be and in different circumstances. And we pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Y'all, please rise and please pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I appreciate everyone's participation there. We'll now go through the process of building our agenda. All items will be considered moved to consent, meaning they are approved, ratified, or as otherwise noted, unless they are held for discussion. On our original consent agenda, we had 24 items. I did not have any to hold from consent. Commissioner Lee, did you have any on consent to hold for discussion?
Just item number one, and then also item number a question on item number 18.
Okay. Commissioner Ames, did you have anything from consent to hold?
I did not.
Okay, thank you. On our regular agenda, we had 28 original items outside of our closed meetings. I have regular agenda items numbers 1, 3, 8, and 23 to be held for discussion. Commissioner Lee, did you have any outside of those? 1, 3, 8, and 23.
Yes, if it's been requested, maybe on item number 1, since they're not ready, if we just strike that item, and then they'll come back on when they're ready, because we've been continuing.
Right. Okay. I am fine moving that to consent for strike.
And so that would, and then item number C8, you said.
That was primarily my, just for the fact I believe we have to set that.
Do action.
It's an action.
I think we have to hold for action number 10 as well.
Okay.
And then is somebody here from the health department? I tried to call them earlier. Oh, yes. Okay, I tried to call you earlier. Sorry. I wonder if we could hold number 19 just for some clarification there. I wasn't quite sure what that was. Those are the ones.
And then, Nathan, can we actually hold number 6? I don't have anything else on the regular other than what's been said, but can we hold number 6 from consent?
Yes.
For a question.
Absolutely. Okay, we will consider all of the items not held, moved to consent, approved, ratified, or as otherwise noted. Are there any general comments or questions on any items moved to consent? Seeing none, we will go ahead and move through the remaining agenda items, starting with consent agenda item number 1, which is Employee of the Month.
And I've got that. Aislinn, would you come on up? Aislinn Tolman Hill is our Employee of the Month or quarter, or however. Since joining the Utah County Health Department, it's not quite the same when we don't can't get everybody here, right? It's kind of different. But hopefully they're watching online. And I have to ask, is it Aislinn or Aislinn?
Aislinn.
Aislinn.
Yep.
Aislinn, okay. Since joining the Utah County Health Department as a public information officer, Aislinn has created an extensive network of channels of communication, including newspapers, television stations, and radio, locally and nationally, and has an excellent rapport with all the media contacts. Aislinn is dedicated to being available to the media and assisting divisions in communicating with the public and media. She writes press releases, media points, and is a highly skilled spokesperson. As Aislinn provides a unique set of talents, skills, and knowledge that are sprinkled with an incredible trial of quality improvement with every project she's involved with. Aislinn was the principal factor, and I remember this because I remember sitting through that board meeting with the health department and talking about it. Aislinn is the principal factor for Utah County Health Department and the Project Public Health Ready, which is PPHR certification, which is a big deal. It's a big deal, more than what I can express here. And that took about 18 months to go through that process, which is fantastic that you did that. Her expertise and knowledge steered the PPHR team through thousands of pages of documents and criteria with PPHR certification. Utah County Health Department now has an all-hazard response plan, a workforce that has received training and development, and actual exercise practice in real events, which was very timely.
It was.
Yes. She has designed a reader-friendly version of the Utah County Health Department's annual report that incorporates clever graphics and intuitive design. Her efforts with social media have been extensive, with an average of two to three posts daily representing all divisions within the health department. Aislinn's knowledge and proficiency with social media has led to increased promotion and increased views and shares of events and services provided by the health department. Under Aislinn's direction, videography has been incorporated into the promotion of health department services on social media. Examples may be viewed at, and it gives the website, but it also talks about West Nile virus prevention, health fair promotion, flu busters, WIC services, seatbelt, bike helmets, diabetes prevention, mosquito bikers, and many more that are on there. Aislinn is well liked by all those she works with, and her talents and commitment to excellence is recognized. And then there was a bunch of individuals who put some of their thoughts for you. I'm going to let you read through them, but congratulations on being recognized for the Employee of the Quarter.
Thank you.
You do have a chance to speak, and since you're a great spokesperson, I figured you'd probably have a few things to say before we do pictures, or I guess we're
going to forget pictures. About talking about myself, actually. Eric would probably disagree, but I was really wondering why my item is not on the agenda. I was getting a little concerned about that, so that probably explains why.
Great. Fantastic. Well, thank you. We got some stuff for you, certificate, so forth.
Congratulations again, Aislinn. We appreciate all your hard work. Up next, we'll look at consent agenda item number 6. Commissioner Ainge, I believe you were the one that had the question on this.
Yeah, I just had a question about the fact that we're still having the county pick up the insurance here, and I just wanted to get a perspective from whether the civil who's working on the contract or whether it's Richard who managed the bidding on this, to see how we feel about that. I know typically we don't do that, and we require the vendor to procure the insurance.
So I'll speak in Richard's behalf. This is Glenn Tanner from Public Works. I believe that the clarification would be this is the requirement for them to carry the insurance. The contract basically is they were bid through FFSL as where we got the competitive bid from. And what they're saying is they'll go ahead and honor that price other than the additional amount they have to have for our insurance requirements. I believe ours is, and Dave, you might have to speak in, I think ours is $3 million, and I believe the state was only $2 million. So they wanted to be able to request that additional differential between the two costs.
Got it. Is that right? It was communicated to me that maybe, so we're just, we're actually paying them for the increase for their own insurance coverage. We are not. Somehow.
Yes, we're
paying them.
That is correct, Commissioner Ainge. We're paying them for the additional cost for their own insurance. And it should be understood that these projects, specifically the helicopter, is only we only pay when we have grant fund available, both for the herbicide as well as for the cost for the helicopter to actually go out and spray. So typically, if we don't have funding from grants to pay for this, we wouldn't actually have this work occur. So all this is covered through grants, but again, they did want to make sure that it was clear that the additional cost for their insurance to meet our minimum requirements, they wanted it to be covered. So,
and apparently that's in the amount of $1,500 for the current year. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what they found out when they called their insured company.
So that would just be an additional cost for us.
Right. Or we could, I mean, that's the question of how do we want to do it, or we not pay the $1,500 and just accept their existing insurance.
That would be up to civil.
That would be an option. Although, I don't know that I would recommend that, given the aerial
given the nature of the work.
Herbicide. Okay. It's, I would not, I think the county would be better off to pay the $1,500 and have the additional coverage and so.
Especially
where risks involved.
Especially where it's grant funds covering it.
Correct.
Right.
Okay. Appreciate you answering those questions. I'm fine with this item.
Okay. Any additional discussion on consent number 6? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion.
I move that we approve consent agenda item number 6.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve consent agenda item number 6. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
That will carry unanimously. All right, we'll now move to regular agenda item number 3.
I think 18.
Yep, sorry, 18. You're right. Missed that one. 18, improvement. This is to look at approving and authorizing the County Commission to sign on behalf of the Sheriff an interlocal cooperative agreement for the Utah County Major Crimes Task Force. Commissioner Lee?
Yes, on this one, as I read down through it, and I realize we've probably been doing business like this or conducting on behalf of this interlocal agreement over the years. One thing stood out, though, in this, and that is that we do supply this group with an attorney. And I also noticed that Orem City supplies this group with a secretary, but the secretary is fully reimbursed, where the attorney, it appears, like from what my reading anyway, that there is no cost back, that's a cost to the county. And so I point this out because with other agencies that we have, like Wasatch Behavioral Health, we do also have an attorney that's there, but the attorney's time is reimbursed back to the county for that work. And so I was just wondering why we don't charge the same, you know, to an outside entity like this.
Yeah, and I don't know that there's an answer to that other than it hasn't been done, but should it be done? It could be done. It could be restructured that way. Maybe Mike has more.
Yeah, I can answer that.
The cases that the task force are dealing with are felony cases, so statutorily they are the county attorney's responsibility. So that's why that liaison is assigned there, because these are cases that will be going to that office.
Okay.
So whether they were coming out of any city, they are going to be county attorney cases.
And that makes sense that makes sense that since it's going to be a felony case that yeah. it would come to the to our office. They don't advise then. I mean, so maybe help me through the process.
Well,
on
any major case, if you're going to talk advisement, if any city has a major case they're dealing with, it's very standard and typical that they'll reach out to the county attorney's office and say, hey, we've got this big case. We want to make sure we're doing it right. And the county attorney's office will advise through the process, since that will land in their lap as something that they're going to take to trial. It's a pretty common practice.
So probably separate that from... because in our other boards, you know, they give advice, they give legal advice as to, there's none of that that happens in the sense of legal advice to the, you know, to the task force itself, separate from, I mean, I get it.
Their job is criminal prosecution. There's also a board for the task force, and I sit on it as well as David Levitt sits on that board. So if there's, you know, advice coming, it would probably come more from that level. And then each city, they're going to still go to their, they're going to go to their legal advice as well.
Okay.
It is a little confusing there because quite often there's a prosecutor that's maybe involved in operations on occasion just to assist or to observe, but... It does here specify that the county attorney's office is designated the entity to provide legal advice on civil matters related to task force operations. And so that, I think, is a little more expansive than just advice regarding the criminal, criminal side of things.
And I don't know if that's referring to the position that David sits on the executive board.
That I don't know.
Yeah.
But it is something, I mean, it's something we might look at going forward. I don't know if you want to hold things up now or not, but I don't recall any specific occasion where we have actually been requested to provide legal advice on civil matters. But the agreement does have that in there. You're right.
Yeah.
I think anytime there's been something of civil in nature, if I can think back through time, the task force is comprised of agencies from around the county. Well, if someone's going to sue the task force, what they end up doing is they sue every entity involved.
Sue every entity anyway.
So, you know, for instance, you know, you name a city, if their employee was there as part of that task force, that city got sued as well. So they're doing their own legal advice at that point. They're hiring their own attorney at that point. The county's not picking up.
We don't have an attorney that goes to the board, takes care of it and says, do this, don't do that, outside of what David does in his function as a board member.
So is Dave acting as that person probably for?
I assume that he would be because I don't think we
Well, he would act as that person on behalf of Utah County. He's not acting as that person on behalf of each city. He doesn't speak for their cities.
Or the board itself.
Or the board. Because our attorneys with Wasatch Behavioral Health, you know, he looks at contracts on both sides and reviews it and looks at what's in the best interest for Wasatch Behavioral Health. And if that's not the case, then, I don't see a problem if that's... Yeah. That's the way it reads.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Okay. Seeing no additional questions, I'd entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve and authorize the County Commission to sign on behalf of the Sheriff and the interlocal agreement as stated number 18 on our published consent agenda.
Second.
A motion and a second to approve consent agenda item number 18. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That will pass 3-0. Next up, we have regular agenda item number 3 now. This is to look at adopting a resolution of appointment of an alternative board member to the Utah County Boundary Commission. Rob that prepared this. I don't know if Rob or Dave wants to briefly explain this. And the question is do we have a name to put forward today, right? And we would need to make that part of the motion or not.
Yeah, Rob might be on the line. I don't
have there is a name
information there.
This is Rob, County Attorney's Office. I know that Gary Ratcliffe approached Chris Paulson and Kim Jackson. Has to be an elected official,
right.
County elected official. And I know Chris Paulson said he'd be willing to do it.
Yeah.
So I put that in the comments as a suggestion.
Perfect.
The next meeting is on the 24th of this month.
Okay.
That's why it's on the agenda today.
And I guess my question primarily around holding this was, do we need to name him in the motion or is
yes,
it just?
Yes, we do. Yeah. Yeah. And then we'll just fill in the blank that exists there in the motion. So.
Okay.
So just state the name and then we'll add that in.
All right. I would entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we adopt the resolution as stated number 3 with the insertion of Chris Paulson in as the name of the alternate appointment to the alternate board member of the Utah County Boundary Commission.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve regular agenda item number 3 with the notation. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That will pass 3-0. Next up, we have regular agenda item number 8. Again, I held this just simply so we could take action to actually set that date.
So what's the date? What date?
The 26th of August.
26th. I'll make a motion if we're ready.
Yep.
I'll make a motion that we set a date for August 26th at 3 o'clock. At 3 mm-hmm. o'clock
yeah.
at this location for a public hearing to consider the item as stated in number 8 on our agenda.
Second that with a note that I think this is ridiculous that we have to do this to reduce pay temporarily, but okay, I second that motion.
I have a motion and a second, duly noted. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That will carry 3-0. All right. Next up, we have regular agenda item number 10. This is to take action on to refer to the Utah County Planning Commission, the proposal. We'd held this primarily because we have to. Are there any questions or thoughts on regular agenda item number 10? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, I'll make a motion that we refer item number 10 to the Planning Commission. It's a proposal for county land use ordinance text amendment, as stated in number 10 on our agenda.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to take action as stated on regular agenda item number 10. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That will carry 3-0. All right, up next, I've got regular agenda item number 19, which is to approve and authorize the signing of an ACTC Plus license agreement with Pleasant Grove City.
I'm just not sure what this is as I was trying to work down through it. So it's, if you could just explain what it is.
Heather Lewis with the Utah County Health Department. This is something we haven't had to do before. The state, the Division of Substance Abuse and Mental Health, has paid for all of the licenses that we have used so far through the Communities That Care founding organization. They have used all of those registrations, and we have a new community coalition that needs a registration, but there are none left to get. So we have to now pay for them ourselves. So that's what this is.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. That's helpful.
Seeing no additional questions, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve and authorize the signing as stated in number 19 on our agenda.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve regular agenda item 19. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
That will carry 3-0. Next up, I have regular agenda item number 23, which is to receive the recommended proposals for the RFP 2020-3 for Workday Consultant and recommend a proposal for further negotiations or award of a contract.
Yes, this was an RFP that was done for a Workday consultant. We had 12 proposals submitted. which the, and the committee had interviews and demonstrations from six of those, and they selected in rank order, number one, Accenture, number two, AVAP, and number three, Canals.
Fantastic. Any questions for Robert on that one? No. Pretty straightforward. Fantastic. I'll entertain a motion.
Excuse me. I'll make a motion that we have received the recommendation proposal for the RFP as stated number 23, and we award the contract to Accenture, which was listed number one for further negotiations.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to receive the recommendation as stated in regular agenda item number 23 with the notations. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 That will carry 3-0. That brings us to the end of our regular agenda items. We do have two work session items. First up is a presentation from the clerk auditor on the 2020 primary election and 2020 general elections. Amelia.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Hope everyone is doing well. Okay, do we have the presentation that'll go up there? There we go. Sure. Okay. So this is just an overview for you guys on how elections are going thus far in 2020, and also a summary of how the June primary election went. 2020 has just been full of unique challenges for us, other than the fact that it's a presidential year, which is always the big year in any election. This year, it was the first year we did a presidential primary. So we had to run three elections this year. And then, of course, this June primary, we had to run a primary in a pandemic and a wildfire. So I wanted to kind of let you know how things went and also how we're trending for the general election to help you have confidence in the work that we have leading up to the 2020 presidential election. On April 16th, the state legislature passed HB 3006. It was elections amendments. That prohibited in-person voting in this primary election. What that meant is that everything we had been planning on for a year and a half was thrown out. We had to basically start over from scratch on how we were going to run that election. It prohibited traditional in-person voting, but it did allow for you to do ballot replacement. Those ballot replacement areas had to be drive up where people stayed in their cars, and the counties had the option of opting in. Only 7 counties in the state opted in. We were one of them. The reason I thought that was so important is that I truly believe that every person who has a right to vote should have the opportunity to vote. I also understand that our processes are not perfect and no processes are. And therefore, I wanted people to have another way to get their ballot. For all we knew, the day before the election, their kids thought it was junk mail and threw it away. I wanted them to be able to vote in that case. So we started immediately by identifying drive-through locations and securing PPE. The requirements were very strict with PPE to protect our employees and the public. We put together what we called our 70-day team. We had literally 70 days between the time we found out we were going to have to change the election and the day the election took place. If you look at the list of our team here, you'll notice this isn't a list of names of people on my staff. This is a list of organizations throughout the county that came together to make this possible. We live in an amazing place, and running an election like this would not have been possible, and it would not have been nearly as successful without our community partners. We had community partners from government, from private sector, and from ecclesiastical organizations come together to help us make this happen. We also utilized a lot of the talent we have right here in the county, not just in my office. I wanted to highlight some of this because truly this could not have been possible without them. Number one would be the Utah County Sheriff's Office. Our Sheriff's Office was fantastic. Not only did they help us plan and prepare for this event, but the day before the election and the day after the election, there were significant protests right here in our area, and our sheriff's department was on site with additional security to help make sure that we could continue with this election without any safety issues for our staff. The EOC, the Emergency Operations Center, was integral. They really spearheaded this. We met with them on a minimum a weekly basis, and they brought together over 20 people to help logistics happen at five locations throughout the county. The Utah County Health Department helped us secure PPE, and they helped us as we went through our procedures and processes to ensure that all of our procedures and processes were working within proper health guidelines to keep our people safe. We also had the Public Works Department. They were fantastic in making sure that we could power our elections equipment. We had a lot of unique challenges where we had to power equipment in the middle of parking lots where there was no plug-in, where we couldn't simply run an extension cord. And they found solutions, worked with vendors, utilized equipment we had, and made that happen. Our IT department mapped out all of our driving locations. That seems like something that's simple, but other counties didn't have access to that. And we were able to share our maps with counties actually from all over the country to show them how we did traffic flow through our GIS department. And that has been helpful to people from all over the country. The attorney's office helped us get contracts done in a timely manner. A lot of these contracts were short notice, and they expedited those, made it so that that was never a bottleneck for us. And then we had the emergency services from Provo, Santaquin, American Fork, and Spanish Fork helped us run all of our different locations, also Saratoga Springs. The BYU's departments were fantastic to work with. BYU typically doesn't allow Lavelle Edwards parking lot for any events that aren't officially sanctioned events by the school. And they made an exception for us on this, but not only did they make an exception to allow us to use their parking lot, they brought parking staff, security staff, and traffic flow staff, did not charge us for that, brought them on site, used their barricades and their cones, which saved us a lot of effort, set all that up for us, took that down for us, and really owned that location and helped us in a way that was really above and beyond, as well as the Lavelle Edwards Stadium staff to help us. The police departments from American Fork, Spanish Fork, and Saratoga Springs, every one of them was on site for, and Provo Police Department, were on site for traffic flow. They helped with public safety. They helped everyone feel safe and keep everything moving. Then the Family History Center in American Fork allowed our poll workers to utilize their facility for shelter and were very kind. Westlake High School really stepped up on this. In Saratoga Springs, Westlake High School was the evacuation point for the Red Cross the day before the election. And Westlake High School went above and beyond to make sure that there was not chaos and that we were still able to house that election. They really did a fantastic job, as well as the staff at the fairgrounds really stepped up and helped us. So this, when I say this was a Herculean effort and a team effort, it really was. We could not have done it without our community partners. Here's a few pictures that you can see there. The bottom right is a bunch of poll workers actually taking an oath of office. They do take an oath of office because that is an official function of my duty, of the clerk's duties. And you can see a couple of the pictures of people utilizing our drive-up locations. So moving past just this election, I want to compare this election to some of our 2018 issues. I know, obviously, as everybody knows, in 2018, we were called the epicenter of dysfunction, and I really came into office wanting to upgrade and update our office, not to just minimum standards, but I really wanted to be the best office in the state and the nation for people to look to. So I want to highlight some of the things that we've done over the last 18 months that are preparing us for 2020 and bringing us into the 21st century. I specifically asked in my budget requests for 2020, I tied them to specific outcomes and performance metrics. And I want to highlight those performance metrics because those are the ones that I told you I would perform on. Number one was improve election security. Number two, increase operational election efficiency and speed. And number three, improve voter convenience and experience. We've been able, even with all of the challenges we've had in 2020, we've been able to accomplish several of these factors, and I want to outline that for you. Outcome number one, reduce the risk of fraud and error through continuous review and update of procedures. I remember when I did my budget presentation, Bill, you specifically asked me, are you reviewing these processes at the end? And I had mentioned that at the end of every election, we do a debrief with our team, and we look at our processes and we see how we can improve them. And this is showing that that works. And I appreciated the question. We were doing it. We continue to do it. And it absolutely makes a difference in our operations. So you could see we have created standard operating procedures for all of the ballot processing tasks. There's several tasks that have to be done with each ballot, and we have an SOP for every one of those. And we're constantly evaluating those, improving them, and updating them. We've already been through two versions this year as we get better and better each election. On top of that, our signature verification on every ballot, we review that three different levels. We have our first pass through the machine, a second pass for signatures that didn't quite match and that we have to have someone who's more skilled look at, and even a third pass where we go into our systems and we look at other voters in that household to see if people simply swapped ballots. We go through this process. We also, after the election, we do a signature audit. The state randomly selects signatures for us. We pull those and audit those to ensure that we aren't letting ballots slip through that shouldn't get through. We also have dual controls implemented on every aspect of the ballot process. An example of that is the custody of our ballots. We make sure that every step of that custody has two election judges. Every time there's ballot pickup, whether it's from the post office or whether it's from a drop box, we have two people. And as they move through our ballot center, we continue to track that custody. Another example of security that we've been able to implement is if we have open ballots, so they've been approved, the signature's been approved, they've been extracted, but we haven't had time to tabulate them, any of those ballots are locked in cages when they're not in play so that we don't have ballots that could possibly just be sitting around. We make sure those are locked in cages. Also, through our adjudication process, we make sure there's a minimum of two people at every one of those stations. And those stations are out in the open. They even have mirror screens. I think I'll go through this on the next slide that allows the public to watch as we adjudicate every one of those. Our next area that we looked at improving is reduce risk of fraud and cost of the election by going through our data management. We do the national change of address lists throughout the year. We're constantly updating the change of address. That's huge for our county because we have two major universities. We have a large migrant population because of that. We're constantly updating those lists. We also want to look towards non-deliverables. Anytime we send a ballot that is sent back to us from the post office, not only is that a potential fraud point, but that's just a waste of money for us to have printed and sent out a ballot just to have it come back. When I took office in January of 2019, the office that Roseanne sits in now was completely full. We had over 20,000 return to sender ballots, and that office was just full of them, and nothing was being done with them. We also implemented audits by the National Cybersecurity Center to allow the public to audit every single one of our electronic ballots cast. So on election security, in the ballot center, we've made huge improvements. I know that this was kind of a big deal for us to get our own space as a ballot center, and you as the commissioners were integral in that. And I wanted you to see how much we've done with that space. With the physical location of the ballots are received, tabulated, prepared for retention, all in one room. So from the time they enter the room, they don't leave that room until they're in boxes, zip-tied, going to archives. We can do that all in one room now. Previously, it was done in six rooms on three floors across two buildings, and they went across the courtyard. We don't have that issue now. With the physical security of that area, if you go down to the ballot center, it has dual access. You can't just have a key or a badge. You have to have both a key and a badge in order to get into that room. That way, if somebody loses one or the other, we haven't compromised our election. We also can audit the key access, and we do audit that access after each election. We've opened up the windows to allow the public, voters, candidates, legal observers, media, you can see the entire process. We added additional windows and opened those up so that everybody can see what we do at all times. On top of that, we've also added security cameras that run 24/7 during our election periods. Anytime we have active ballots, we have security cameras in that area. The adjudication monitors, we have two monitors, and they go back to back, they mirror. And so a person on one side is adjudicating ballots, and the public on the other side through the window can see everything they're doing, and they can see those ballots being adjudicated in real time so that there's no question about our processes or how we're doing it. We also, during the election period, don't allow blue or black ink into the ballot processing center. Our ballot instructions specifically say, fill out your ballot using blue or black ink. And then we don't allow blue or black ink in our ballot center. And we change the color of pen we allow in the ballot center every election so that if we're marking things, we can see that it's an odd color. If we were to go and look at a ballot and we see that the entire ballot is filled out in blue or black ink, and then all of a sudden there's some green ink on there and we're using green pens, then we know that something could be awry. We haven't had that happen, but we implement that just in case. We also now require visitor badges for public tours and for processing of the ballot center. So our key accomplishments, and I'm tying these back again to the performance metrics that I asked for in our budget. Election efficiency, reduce wait times at peak to less than 45 minutes, down from upwards of 6 hours. The longest wait that we've had in an election in 2020 has been 20 minutes, with average wait times under 5 minutes. With all things considered, moving into 2020 presidential general election, I feel confident that we will be able to meet that less than 45 minute goal. Election efficiency, release results immediately as polls close with all the votes in possession in our office. In 2018, Utah County only had half of their ballots counted when the polls closed on election night. In this presidential election, we had almost 85% of our ballots counted and released right at a polls closing. The primary election, it was 2 hours later because that's what the state law required of us under HB 3006. But right as we could release results, we had the majority released. By the end of the night, because we stayed late and did a second release, we had done over 90% of our ballots. We had less outstanding ballots than counties 1/10 our size. So we've gotten really good at processing our ballots. Election efficiency, minimize time to process each ballot. Each ballot, if we can reduce that time, we can reduce the amount of labor we need to do that. Our Agilis can process 18,000 ballots an hour. Our new scanners, the DS850s, can tabulate 300 ballots per minute. In 2018, the scanners we had from Dominion were only able to process 100 per minute. So we're three times what we were before. Increase voter outreach and voter education. We updated the website to utahcounty.vote. That goes directly to our elections website, making it so that public don't have to try to navigate through the elections through the county website to get to the elections website. They now have a direct link, utahcounty.vote. We increased vote by mail adoption and our Dropbox utilization. That's a huge savings in postage. It also decreases logistics, increases security, and it streamlines the process. We've put these ballot drop boxes all over the county, and people are using them. On election day in June, we had 29,000 people utilize our drop boxes. Between the night before when we'd emptied them and then the close of polls, 29,000 people used our drop boxes. That's 29,000 people who we know the chain of custody of their ballot, and we didn't have to pay postage on. So that's fantastic. In-person voting has drastically been reduced. In 2018, about 10% of the votes were cast in person. In the primary election in 2020, in June, 1.84% of votes were cast in person. It costs us a lot more to have people show up at a polling location and cast their vote. So that reduction is, if that trends forward, will be a huge cost savings for us. Which means that as our population grows, we're not going to have to get a higher percentage of machines. I mean, this really cascades. If we look 10 years down the road, we can utilize our current capacity for more citizens if this trend continues. The rate of return mail, undeliverable mail. Remember this, I told you Roseanne's office was full of undeliverable mail. It's a huge cost for us to send that out. It also is a huge opening for voter fraud. This has been a huge priority for us as a staff. It's been one of the biggest things that we've done. In 2018, it was just over 10%. The national average is 4 to 5%. In this primary election, our return to sender percentage was 2.67%. I believe in my performance metrics that I asked for budget for. I think I asked for us to have the budget so that we could reduce this to 4 to 5%, and we've already beat that.
Hey, Amelia.
Yeah?
Do you have any firm numbers on, well, and I, this is a little out of turn. I have a comment I want to make about the whole presentation, but I'll hold on that. But just, do you have real numbers on what this would have looked like how much would we have spent on postage if it had been,
like, if those 29,000 had used, was it 22 cents? Year. I think it's 22 cents per ballot is what this post office is currently charging us. Do you know the number of ballots, Josh?
I mean, the rough estimate's about $1 a ballot because you have the print cost, the outgoing sending. Mail cost, and the return mail cost on a bad ballot.
So I guess it asks, are you asking about the return to sender? Because that's about $1 per ballot. Or if you're asking for the drop boxes, that's 22 cents per ballot that we saved. So there's maybe a little bit of a difference there. If we had had a 10% return rate with our ballots this year, I think we sent out 170,000 ballots, 17,000, that would have been $17,000. Instead, it was less than 3%. So.
Got it. No, that's what
I was
a
third of 17,000.
Okay, so, and that's just what, for the six? Primary. And if we
yes.
have done these updates, we get the benefit of that. Not only this general election, but then mm-hmm. in future years as well.
Yeah, so we saved roughly $12,000 just by updating our lists in one election. And then the presidential primary, it probably would have been, I would say, comparable. So maybe $25,000 we've saved year to date in not sending those ballots. And then in the presidential election, we'll have roughly 300,000 active registered voters. At 10%, that would have been an additional $30,000. So my guess is, and about 20,000. So we probably would have saved about $70,000. Just running it off the top of my head, just cleaning up our voter lists has saved the county $70,000 this year. That's my estimate. If you include the drop boxes that we purchased and the volume that we get returned, we have more people use our drop boxes than we do have the mail back. So even if we just used 50%, we had 100,000 people return their ballots to us this election. We saved 22 cents for each one that used a drop box. We had 50,000 use a drop box, which actually was significantly higher than that. But if we just say those numbers, our savings are in the tens of thousands of dollars. And every one of those adds up.
That's
great. To surmise, Utah County is no longer the epicenter of dysfunction.
Well done.
A question for you.
Yeah.
It's a curious question, and that is curiosity question, let's put it that way. And that is, there was over 20,000, I can't remember the exact numbers, that ballots weren't sent out because they weren't active voters.
Mm-hmm.
Of those 20-something thousand, do you have a count of how many of them actually showed up and voted in person? Do you have any numbers like that?
Well, we only had about 1,300. Well, how many do we have total? 1,300 was one side. It was about 3,600 vote. I think we had less than 4,000 people show up and vote in person. And a lot of those are people whose address changed and did get a ballot, or they were unaffiliated and decided to affiliate. So if you're looking at 4,000, if we say, let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say 75% of that was that, that would have been 3,000. That would have been less than 1/7 of those 20,000. And that's shooting high.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm always curious at numbers like that, you know, giving everyone an opportunity to vote. Do those, I mean, I would think that, and now I realize we ran a Republican primary in this, not necessarily a Democrat, Democrat side or any other party, but do those numbers go back? Because I would think that the parties would be very interested in if there's large groups of their party affiliation who are just inactive, don't have a ballot. Do they... Are they helpful at all in cleaning that up? Maybe I'm asking a question I kind of know the answer to, but I'm just wondering if, you know, if they have that kind of interest in going in there and saying, there's 25 or 20, whatever it is, I can't remember, 20, oh, I know it's over 20,000 people that, you know, that are a part of, were a part of a party but didn't get a ballot, if they're interested in cleaning some of that up.
I think it depends on who the party chair is at that time. Really, I mean, if there's someone who's a chair of the party who's interested in cleaning it up, then they do. If they're not interested, then they don't. So it's not a consistent thing.
Yeah.
Where they do have interest, we work with them. Anything we can do to help keep our voter rolls more current, we do. And those voters are exactly the reason why I felt it was important, even though it was a logistical nightmare and it was a huge Herculean feat. This is why I thought it was important that we have these places, these ballot replacement stations available on election day. 22 counties chose not to, and the citizens in those counties, if they didn't get one in the mail or they lost it, they didn't get to vote.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I mean, at least there's an opportunity for that to happen.
Absolutely, there's an opportunity. And as soon as they become an active voter, if they have signed a petition or voted, they then we send them a ballot.
Also, previous to this year and some of these changes, one of the requirements under state law is that you send a notice to a voter at the time they're about to become inactive. And the county historically wasn't sending those notices out to those voters to let them know they're going to become inactive, because that gives the voter an opportunity to then respond to that mailing to prevent them from becoming inactive. That's something that's really important as you transition to vote by mail. So as the county is now fully transitioned to vote by mail, we're now doing that more, you know, more thoroughly in each election. That helped to continue to keep the rolls fresh and accurate, and it also gives those inactive voters a notice that they may be coming inactive soon.
Good. Thank you.
And if any one of them showed up at the polls, we still have their voter registration on file, and if they had moved, we had the opportunity to update their address.
Thank you.
Amelia and Josh, I just want to thank you and your team, not just for the presentation, that's just the culmination of the efforts, but for what you've done to turn this department around from being the epicenter of dysfunction in such a short period is remarkable. And I know it goes all the way down to every person on your team, not just the two I mentioned. And I think that's absolutely critical, especially at this time. You know, there are people who are asking questions about, can vote by mail be done? And you just did, with just over 1% of voting in person, having a safe, secure election with a high degree of turnout. And so I just applaud you. I'm grateful for your leadership in this area, that it really is being recognized nationally.
And
I think it makes all of our citizens feel good knowing that their vote counts and it's safe and secure.
Thank you.
Secondly, this type of presentation, I hope all of our departments are looking at this, is exactly what we need. Your department, you said there were problems that you're going to address, and you asked for some additional funding from your historical budget this year, and we gave that to you. And you didn't just go and say, oh yeah, things are better. You returned, you reported with this type of accountability, showing us how you have turned things around, how you've saved money in some instances, In other instances, how you've just spent more money, but you've accomplished the goals that you said you're going to accomplish. I hope we see presentations like this from every department as we go through the budget cycle this year. And I just want to thank you for your example in setting this out.
Yeah, thank you. We'll definitely have updates when it comes to budget cycle. We'll hopefully have the presidential statistics, and we'll also go through in all of our areas. I agree. I think looking at your performance metrics and measuring to them, in the corporate world, they have a saying, and that's what gets measured is what matters. And we look at these measurements and we focus on these things, and we're making a difference because of it. So thank you.
Sure. Great job.
Thank you.
Okay, next up we have a discussion on the Utah Capital Improvement Program. Rudy.
I don't see Rudy. I was just looking for him.
He sent an email that...
Sorry, I received a note that needs to be continued to our next meeting.
We will continue that one on. We will now go ahead and look at setting our closed meetings. I have a note that we need sale and litigation.
And if we could also do professional confidence as well.
Okay.
So I'll set them. I'll start them. I'll make a motion that we strike number 30 on our regular agenda.
Second.
A motion and a second to strike regular agenda item number 30. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And carry 3-0.
I make a motion that we improve and set a date, time, and locations for items number 29, number 31, and number 32 on our regular agenda.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to set the meetings as outlined in regular agendas. Items numbers 29, 31, and 32. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 I will carry 3-0. Bring us to the end of our regular agenda items. We would take any general public comment at this time. Seeing none, we will thank everyone for their participation and move into our closed set meetings. Okay, we are now back in our regular session. Entertain a final motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to adjourn. Undebatable, we stand adjourned.